your way to Hades, and I am on the way to hell. What is this to you? Leave me alone!
Can't do it. We'll do it live. We'll do it live. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
And WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I think you guys are doing a terrific job. There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Max Schmid is brilliant and Arpo Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. It's a tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
History, where this morning we are going to listen to, of course, Lost Gene Shepherd from the Heinz Collection, 1974 today, just before they started sticking hundreds of commercials in the Gene Shepherd program, from this very day in history, July 1st, 1974, Night Animals. We're going to hear about all kinds of interesting animals, and take us back to the Watergate era as well. Shepherd tells the story of a shrieking beast in Arlington, as reported by the Washington Post, that kills animals. Went on quite a spree. And as a matter of fact, if you go to our Facebook page, the Dustbin of History, or any of the other ones this is cross-posted to, you'll see an article. Is it from the Washington Post? Well, it's, the writer of the article is from the Journal, so I don't know where this clipping is from. I just came across it. Is the beast still working? Read all about it. Let's listen to Lost Gene Shepherd, July 1st, 1974. To wrap up tonight's Dustbin of History, WBAI in New York.
it's time once again for the Hit the Ding Dong Hour. We have thousands of fantastic prizes for you. We have a couple of unbelievable guests. Oh, you ought to see this wine called Rye. We've got it all. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It's all right. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. That's right. Due to uncontrolled public opinion, we must continue with our delving into the esoterica of the world of art. Yes, not the chic of Air B. And I got all the dead boys in the world. Oh, da 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 And I got the world by the you know what. Oh, I got them coming and going both ways. We just sit here and the money squirts out of the ground, 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 ground. And by God, they're going to dance to my tune. Because I'm the sheik, sheik, sheik of Arabi, bop, man, and star.
Good. All right, Coyne. Okay, not bad. Don't look so serious, Dave. It's all right. Just relax. It's going to be okay. That's clear seeing you. By the way, before we go any further, we would like to salute. Let's see, what do I have here? Yes, we would like to salute the Paris perfume industry who have designed a new perfume designed to calm men down. Aren't you? Well, all right. That's all it says. Calm men down. And I've felt moments of intense, I suppose you might say anxiety. Have you, Corny, in the last few years? You just if you could devise a perfume that you spray on yourself that calms you down, I suppose you can also design a perfume that would do the opposite. That would create within you a feeling of not only anxiety, but fantastic aggressiveness. I'll say this personally. I think one of the great human qualities that is often mistaken for talent is sheer aggression. You agree with that? I mean, we all see the case of Barbara Streisand. There's a classic example of aggression over who knows what. But I've known people like that in my time. I'll tell you, we had a kid, and I was in fourth grade, and we had a girl. It was the Barbara Streisand of 4B, and her name was Pullen. Rosemary Pullen, which is a classic name for aggression right there. Anyway, Rosemary Pullen played the tenor saxophone. Now, that in itself is can in some ways hold your society, your social life down. But nevertheless, this girl played the tenor saxophone and was so aggressive about it that we had to listen to the tenor saxophone almost every afternoon. When Rosella Pullen, that was her name, Rosella. Yeah, it's a great name. It's even better, Rosella. And Rosella was a short, fat girl who wore dirndls. You know what a dirndl is? You don't know what a dirndl is? Well, a dirndl, Corny knows what a dirndl is, of course. It's a dirndl. You know what, don't you? Any of you in there know what a dirndl is? Why am I surrounded with illiteracy? I am. I have a feeling that 97% of the world, in spite of the fact they all think they're with it and know things, are basically sunken deep into the morass of total Stygian ignorance. You mean you don't know what a dirndl is? All right, look it up. This will be tonight's lesson. Look it up. I'm not going to give you the answer. Dirndl. D-I-R. Dirn. D-I-R-N-D-L. Dirndl. Dirndl. It is a Hungarian word. No, but it's a very popular... No, don't say, oh, that answers it. Well, pie à la mode is a French word. You know what that means, don't you? Of course. Just because it's a Hungarian word doesn't mean you shouldn't know. You know what, you all know what shish kebab is, huh? Are you aware what word this is? This is an Armenian word. Oh, God. Everywhere I look. We got to calm the people down. By the way, speaking of calming the people down, the Washington Post has been in the news a great deal lately. You notice that? Everybody talks about the... I never heard, hardly heard of this paper until all of a sudden everybody's talking about the Washington Post. And it might, you know, it might come across your mind that all the Washington Post does is print news about Watergate. This is partially true. But on the other hand, there are other things that the Washington Post... And by the way, speaking of Watergate... do I have that chair? Can I have those chairs again, Connie, please? Watergate has brought the roses to the cheeks of many people. I'll tell you, without Watergate, just think how dull life would be. Would you please give me a cheer for Watergate? I'm the only guy in the town, I think, that absolutely admits, honestly admits, that he enjoys Watergate. I love to read about Watergate, you know, and I love to see defendants squirming in the dock. Of course, this has always been a thing that man has enjoyed. Goes back to the French Revolution, you know, tumbrils and all that stuff. But, yeah, I've taken up knitting. I'm going to sit there by the side there, and I'm going to knit. And once in a while, I'm going to holler something like, let him eat cake. I don't know whether that fits, but it kind of sounds good. It's got style. Would you give me a cheer again for Watergate, Corny Plains? Another cheer for Watergate. That's it. That's it. Come on, wild applause. That's it. Uncontrollable applause. I gotta, so hold it there, man. That's enough uncontrollable applause. I got to, point out to you that not only has Watergate brought a great deal of enjoyment to many people, it's brought a great deal of business to many people. Do you realize it has been the greatest boon to the bumper sticker industry since LBJ was in the White House? And, boy, there's a lot of guys, I mean, if you want to buy stock that's going to go up, Dave, it's the bumper sticker stock. There's an outfit called Chicanery, Inc., and they're on the little board. And you just, it's going up, man. Buttons, they sell buttons and little beanies, you know, with propellers on the top that say, I voted for McGovern, you know, little things that go around. And, you know, that's just like saying, I voted for Alf Landon. But nevertheless, the facts of the matter are that Watergate has become a fantastic business, and anything that's good for business is good for the American population. You agree? We need good rising businesses, and Watergate is. In fact, one guy who's a famous designer, he has designed many stamps. Now, you never hear about stamp designers, do you? You know, the guy that actually designs the stamp that says, salute to horse racing. Did you see that most recent stamp? There's a picture of the $2 window there, and a guy standing in front of with a gun at his head and all that, you know. It says, salute the horse. That would be a great stamp. You know, salute the horse racing. It shows a guy hitchhiking along the LIE, trying to get home from Yonkers or something. But nevertheless, these stamps, you know, have to be designed by guys. And so a guy sits down, he says, he gets a call, you know, he's a stamp designer. And the phone rings, and he's waiting there, you know, at his desk. And he picks up the phone, he says, hello? And there's a pause. He says, yeah, salute to what? The Zeppelin. We don't have no Zeppelins. Oh, well, yeah, I said, we'll make a pretty stamp. Yeah, I've seen them, yeah. You mean those big things flying around up in the air with the silver, the ones that burn up and blow up and all? Yeah, okay. Very good. All right, salute to Zeppelin. And so he sits down, and he, you know, two or three days go by, and he's knocked out a fantastic stamp, a salute to the Zeppelin. Now, we've had salutes to all kinds of things in the last couple of years in the stamp world. We've had, did you know that there was a stamp, a very rare stamp, salute to quilt making? Well, you wouldn't know about that in New York. But out in the 4-H world out there, that was a big stamp. And the salute to quilt making, the salute to home canning was a good one. Yeah, it showed a guy drinking Alka-Seltzer. By the way, then you could come up with some really great stamps, you know. Salute to the X-Lax industry. You know, it shows, well, you know, we don't get into that. But you, all kinds of things are open for great stamp salutes. But most recently, a stamp designer who was, you know, in between assignments, he designed a set of 20 stamps, which he is now distributing, beautiful stamps that you can't use them to make. They're not official. That is, yet, they're not official. Maybe 25, 30 years when the dust has settled, these stamps will become official. But salute to Watergate. And he has, yes, you can buy them now. And they're beautiful stamps. They look exactly like real stamps. There's a stamp showing H.R. Haldeman. And he's surrounded all around him. You can see it's very symbolic. He is surrounded by a symbolic web of tape. You see back of him, see? And then there's Ehrlichman. And it's just a picture of Ehrlichman's face, and he's looking very nervous. And underneath the stamp, it says, Ehrlichman, John Ehrlichman, our benefactor. And then have a salute to John Dean. And and behind John Dean, you see this whistle blowing. It's symbolic, you know, the squealer. And, everybody has. Have you noticed that the confession today is a big business? Generally, you look confused now at that one. What do you think Philip Roth does? That's right, confession. Confession has become the quickest, surest way to the bestseller list. Now, if you can even... Of course, most confessors I know, and I've known several professional confessors, and after all, I've had a lot of published work, and I know a lot of writers and stuff, and so many of the professional confessors I know years ago ran out of actual confessions, and they also realized that their confessions basically were unbelievably dull, since most of us have very little to confess about. So they began to invent confessions, and of course that's very exciting. You know very well. Have you ever read a book of confessions like My Life as a Man? Did you ever try to read that by Roth? Well, you get past the second paragraph and you realize that he's living in a totally different planet than human beings, you know, and it's this cross currents of neurosis and anger and doubt and that search for identity. Hell, I've never had a problem. Have you ever had a problem really searching for your identity? Have you? You have. Well, congratulations. That's a good way to make yourself a bestseller right there. I think that has come with modern men. See, I think we've invented a word called identity. Just like man, about 1,000 years ago, invented a word called love. Well, if you invent a word called squibbly-ips-bips, which is something that all men should have, ultimately you would have millions of men flinging themselves out of windows because they've not been able to find it. In short, there's a thing called... no, I'm serious. I'm very serious about that. And the desire to search out what you are, in other words, the search for identity, is a modern man concept. Now, it could be terrible to suddenly discover what you are and find that, you're totally infinitesimal. You're just one in a great vast torrent of living organisms, no better nor worse than all the others, designed to be born, to live briefly and then die and disappear like all the other grains of sand on the eternal beach of existence. It's a hell of a thing to discover. You won't accept that. I am me, magnificent me. Which reminds me, this is WOR, New York. No connection. No, it's all in your own mind. What a rotten, stinking mind. That calls for a beer, please.
You can see them on Malibu mornings and Oahu afternoons, paddling silently out on their floors.
This is one of the best perfect way type of beer commercials.
And every great once in a while, the sea will give up a perfectly shaped 15-foot monster. And if you're there, and if you're very good and very lucky, you might find yourself tucked tight inside a blue cathedral doing 30 miles an hour and yelling your head off with joy. And after a ride like that, you've got to share that kind of moment with good friends over a great glass of beer.
If you've got the time, we've got the beer, Miller Beer, Miller Taste.
That's what Miller Time is all about. Taking time to appreciate the best tasting beer you can find. Miller High Life, America's quality beer since 1855.
Sardi's Restaurant would like to introduce you to their special Club Sardi Dinner, $6.95 plus tax, served nightly from 4:30 p.m. to midnight except Sunday. Club Sardi's has tempting entrees, including their famous cannelloni and delicious supreme of chicken Sardi. Start with a choice of appetizer, end with a selection of Sardi's desserts. Reservations are suggested. Please mention Club Sardi when calling. The number is 524-0707. That's Sardi's at 234 West 44th Street.
There are legends that date back to Cortez, of rivers of emeralds, idols of solid gold, buried pirate booty. Only legends? Yes, until one man with guts and brains proved them true. One man who dreamed of the legendary Incan city of gold and found it. Howard Jennings went where few men have dared to go and found the hidden treasures most of us only dream about. He lived to get the treasure out and write about it in The Treasure Hunter, his new book written with Robin Moore, who lived the adventures with him. Robin Moore, the man who gave a new meaning to the word adventure in the Green Berets and the French Connection. Now comes his most exciting book. Gun duels in the shadow of Inca pyramids, hairbreadth escapes in snake-infested jungles, and the thrill of uncovering a fortune in gold and emeralds buried for centuries. The Treasure Hunter, from Prentice Hall, $8.95 at your bookstore. The Treasure Hunter, the greatest adventure of your lifetime. And every word is true.
Gee, that sounds like very serious type reading. The greatest adventure of your... Wouldn't it be sad if reading a book was the greatest adventure of your lifetime? You know, that comment is lost on most New Yorkers who don't see the irony of that. They really do. They really, really believe that seeing a fantastic movie about sex is a sexual experience. Now, you're not fooled by that, are you, Corny? I mean, you've been, let's say, in the field. Right. Okay. And, you know, it's a... Oh, by the way, Miller Beer is brewed by the Miller Brewing Company of picturesque, colorful Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which stands like a small diamond on the great hearth of Wisconsin, glistening and gleaming there, a diadem in our tiara of American cities, right? But, you know, while we're on the subject of diadems, now, again, I said diadems. This has nothing to do with birth control. Now, so stop it now. That's a problem with your mind out there. What do you mean, Fred? It's too bad. If you didn't get it, I'm sorry, Chester. You better go back to Route 22 to the McDonald's and sit down and have yourself a Big Mac. That's your speed. By the way, Route 22 recently was the scene of an unbelievable fiasco. Did you hear about it? A truck went 8.5 miles along Route 22 heading west, and all the while its tailgate had opened and it was dropping chicken gizzards. Route 22 for 8.5 miles. I can see all those Jerseyites looking out at the chicken gizzards. A moment of true insight into reality. If you've ever seen a chicken gizzard, that ain't exactly Colonel Sanders. You know what a chicken gizzard does? You know what a gizzard does? You do. Don't tell them you know that. You don't know what a dirndl is, but you know what a chicken gizzard does? What the hell kind of a spotty education have you had? A chicken gizzard. I always thought that there was the name of some kind of an actor, George Gizzard. No, that's another dude. That's something else. I'm sorry, yeah. George Grizzard, I'm sorry. Oh, yes, I'm glad you straightened me out. Yes, I like to get straightened out. However, we have a note here from the Washington Post. Now, if you think the Washington Post, getting back to that, you didn't think I would, did you? Well, the Washington Post has recently published a story, and I want you to listen carefully to it. The Washington Post, and this is written by somebody named Doug Brown, and the headline is, Shrieking Beast in Arlington Slays Pets and Runs in the Woods. Now, you would automatically think this is another Watergate story, but it is not. It's literally true what it says. An unidentified animal that kills its prey and then shrieks loudly.
has killed 24 cats, dogs, rabbits, and all kinds of animals and pets in an area of Arlington over the past 4 weeks. Its most recent victim, according to the police, was a giant police dog killed yesterday. Give me one of them sounds. Out of the darkness of the Arlington jungle comes an enormous animal snorting fire. Oh, God, listen to that. Let's hear some more of that, Corny. I love that primal sound. Come on, lay it on me. The cry of the Senate Watergate Committee in full cry, in full heat. Give me the other one now. This is a better one. Listen to this. Can you guess what this is? A scream of rage. You know, that does something good to you, doesn't it? Just hearing this. Ah, that's great. Just keep that in abeyance there. Thank you, Corny. Thank you, Corny. This animal, which authorities, you know, have you noticed that there's always, under any circumstance, authorities appear? The world is filled with authorities. And having spent some time with many of them, probably I, more than most average walking around guys, have a great feeling of insecurity. I have never yet discovered a true authority on anything. Have you, Dave? No. Oh, no. I am not an authority. I'm the first to say I'm not an authority. In fact, that's what's led to my lack of popularity. No, seriously. You must never admit your basic humanity, which is to say that you're not an authority. I mean, you must always be implacable. You notice, for example, Dr. Rubin answers every question. He never says, geez, you know, beats me, Johnny. I don't know about that. What, you say they do what? You say in the jungles of Buna Buna they do that? Oh, that sounds like fun. No, it beats me. I don't know what that means. No way. He answers every question glibly. Have you noticed that? Now, I have a lot of friends who are doctors, and even several friends whose specialty is genetics. And almost to a man, I have found them sadly at sea in the world of personal sex, flailing away. But that does not stop them from becoming an authority. No way. In fact, writing books on the subject. And so we always search for authorities. And if you notice that an authority immediately leaps up and assures the police what this animal is. Now, let's do tonight's show on authorities, you know. How many of you remember some great authorities of the past? Do you recall before we landed on the moon, do you remember the great authorities that were appearing on all the talk shows? There was one guy from Harvard who was a famous astronomer who appeared on the talk shows. And he had everybody really worried because he kept saying that there was a 30-foot layer of dust on the moon. And that when the spaceships landed there, they would sink out of sight. Do you remember that guy? Well, he sunk out of sight. I wonder where he is. Probably still down there saying, well, damn it, I'll tell you, it's still there someplace. If they keep looking on the moon, they'll find that dust. Well, he's disappeared. And you remember the experts for a while who were all over the talk shows telling you about safflower oil or whatever the hell that was? What was safflower oil? I think a whole bunch of them landed in the can for that one, didn't they? You remember that one? Don't you remember safflower? See, now that's... Now, wait, may I say this? Now, your confusion in your faces show one of the reasons why authorities are always successful. The average walking around American has trouble even remembering last Wednesday. So he simply doesn't remember the last 17 implacable, totally right authorities that have appeared. He doesn't remember it. You know? So he's going to buy the next one. Because he doesn't remember the last 17 phonus balonuses who have sold him a bill of goods all the way down the line. Do you remember the guy that was appearing on all the talk shows? Telling you how you can make $1 million. He knew all about money. Do you remember that guy? He wrote a book, you know, The Great Money. He was the guy that was caught in some of the latest flim-flams, right? Right. How are you, Adam? Good. Join the club. Okay. So, see, experts are always self-proclaimed. Unless, on the other hand, the Times says you're an expert. Then you are a true expert. But if you don't like a guy, he's a self-proclaimed expert. If you like him, he's an expert. You understand that? If you if a guy's a friend of yours, he's a liberal. If he's not, he's a pseudo-liberal. Or he's a self-proclaimed liberal. Understand that? Or don't you see that? You don't? You got to think carefully about these things. These are very complex concepts. Very, very deep. Very deep. Gets deep into the swamp of human mind. But nevertheless, these authorities have come out of the bushes immediately and are assuring the experts that what that animal must be is a bobcat. Well, I've known a few bobcats in my time, and I cannot conceive of a bobcat killing a German shepherd. Can you? No way. But the experts say it was. But the animal says, the experts then say, it must be an exotic animal. How's that for a catch-all phrase? That could mean anything from a dinosaur to the abominable snowman to King Kong. By the way, those are all exotic animals, in case you're curious. But anyway, the idea of this animal coming out and screaming, it says she had a 15, this one lady had a 15-pound tomcat that was completely devoured by this creature. Now, a 15-pound tomcat, have you ever dealt with a 15-pound tomcat? There is an animal that could kill a great shepherd. But anyway, she says this animal just keeps coming in and out of the bushes. And then when it does it, listen to this one, when it does it, it lets forth, and get ready with your tape in there, it lets forth with an unearthly scream, which could be heard for maybe 2 or 3 miles. Oh, God, I'd love to see that animal. I mean, it's beating its chest. Listen to this. Can you imagine this coming in, drifting in through the patio? Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, wow. Listen, I want to put it down. At ease. Listen, at ease, man. At ease. Now, most walking around Americans, you know, the interesting thing about our continent, and I'm speaking of our whole continent, is that it does not have many true savage animals. I'm talking about, walking around animals. I'm not talking about philosophical animals. We have plenty of those. But I'm talking about real walking around savage animals. We don't have many on this continent. About the only one we have is the grizzly. Well, listen, I'll tell you. Anybody who's confused between a real bear and Yogi Bear, and this is this is the Walt Disney syndrome, which has cursed many an American. You know, he says, "Oh, look at, there's Yogi Bear out there. Roll down the windows." Well, the next scene, of course, we carefully draw the curtain over the next scene. But this is a common problem. I did you hear about the guy? I knew a girl one time. I imagine you heard about this, who was like, all animals are basically friendly. All animals are basically friendly, and what makes them unfriendly is evil man. You know, if they ever are unfriendly, it's evil man that makes them. You've heard this said many times. Well, I knew a girl who believed this strongly till one day she tried to pet a polar bear. We draw the curtain now over the ensuing scene, which, since there are women and children with us, and probably even Peggy Fitzgerald, we better draw the curtain and tell you that it's quite the opposite. Man in the jungle, when he was early primitive man, what made him first really ferocious was the ferocity of the competition. Does that ever occur to you? That man, when he began, was a very timid creature. He was, in fact, a little like Truman Capote. And he skulked under lily pads, and he hid on the shores of ancient lakes with his little webbed feet, ready to go swimming quick again if anything bad yelled in the woods. And he'd come out at night. Yes, man was a nocturnal hunter, you know, in the beginning. You may not know these things, but you've come to the right place for all this great basic anthropological and zoological information. But nevertheless, man was a nocturnal hunter in the beginning because it was safer, see. Well, it was only when certain felines began to develop nocturnal hunting instincts of themselves and could see in the dark when all of a sudden, man, you know, at that time, man was not more than maybe 7 or 8 inches high. He was little, see, covered with fur, and he had a fin down his back. But don't laugh, Corny. What is this? Is this prejudice on your part again? I mean, it's just a matter of luck that you happen to be born in the 20th century, not, let's say, in 16 millennia B.C. You could have been born then, which point you would have been 6.5 inches tall and have a fin down your back. You would have known the difference. You'd have hid down there among the dandelions and the lily pads. And you ate, you know, you might know from some of the... have you noticed that a kid will have a... Anybody who's watched kids will eat insects. Did you know that? See, Corny's the only one who says yes. He knows that. See, because you people have not lived in the areas where Corny has lived, where he sees life the way it really is. See, most of you come from Queens, which, of course, lives almost exclusively on TV dinners and bird's eye frozen squash. So you don't really get a chance to see what man is like in the reality. And children will eat bugs instantly and think nothing of it. Are you aware that many, many people all over the world look upon insects as one of the better sources of protein and food? Well, it's only in America that we think, well, no, they don't eat bugs. Well, man used to eat bugs just naturally. Just absolutely naturally, just the way a smallmouth bass eats a minnow naturally. You know, he just hits it. Well, what does this say to you? That man originally was an insect eater, and so he would come out, you know, and he would skulk around looking for beetles. Well, he was very little at that time, and a beetle was pretty big compared to him, right? He was 6.5, maybe 7 inches tall, and a very tall man at that time was maybe. Just a little under 8 inches high. You know, he could have played on the Knicks of the period. So, nevertheless, there were developed, simultaneously with the creation of man at that time, they developed a feline who could see in the dark, who proceeded to go out at night and hunt for man. At which point he also made loud noises like this. Well, man, who was out running around in the weeds there looking for beetles, hearing this, I mean, you know, my God, the next thing you know, he's back in the log there, you know, he's living in the hollow log, sweating like crazy. And this thing kept stalking around out in front there, yelling. So man had to make a change. He did. He began to hunt in the daytime. Because the feline is a nighttime hunter, too. Now, you did not expect this type of lesson here tonight, I'm sure, did you, friends? But since you inadvertently walked into it, you're getting it. Now, the fear of an animal coming out of the dark, an unnamed animal, that has piercing screams accompanying it, has always accompanied the history of people almost since the very beginnings of time. Have you ever heard of the great Jersey Devil? Have you ever heard of the rolling calf? Okay. These are both the same and the one and spring out of the identical myth. What is the rolling calf? Well, it's an unnamed animalistic evil that comes across the field with great lights, right? You can see it coming. And it has fantastic screams. And more than that, it's unbelievably deadly. That's the rolling calf. Now, any of you have ever been down to Jamaica and down in the islands, and if you ever, in certain circles, loudly say as you're sitting there drinking your beer, and by the way, they have great beer down in the islands, and I don't think their beer ever gets enough credit. Do you agree, Corny? They have some of the better beer around. You're sitting there drinking beer, maybe a couple of fingers of that light, warm rum, you know, with a little ice in it. And if you just holler in certain places, the rolling calf is on its way, the place would be cleared out in 30 seconds. Damn right it's true. I'm not kidding you. Now, I know certain places in Jersey, in what they call the Piney Barrens, that if you walked into, say, Al's Bar and Grill, and you hollered the following.
The Jersey Devil is on the way! Here it comes! The Jersey Devil is on the way!
I'll tell you what would happen.
Oh, my God. Oh, wait a minute now. Don't laugh. Don't laugh. Don't laugh. Don't laugh. Not that you feel like laughing when you hear this. Whittle hits. Yeah. Now he's getting down. There it goes. There he made his kill. Oh, God. You hear the bones crunching. Now, the Jersey Devil and the Rolling Calf and the great monster of the Dismal Swamp. Have you ever heard of the monster of the Ozarks? He made a movie about that one. Have you ever heard of the Yeti? Have you ever heard of the great monster of the Northwest? They call it the Kosatch or Kohatch or Potlatch or some damn thing. You've heard of him? Well, all of these things come out of the same deep fear that we all have. Everybody has it, no matter how smart you are. No matter how thickly you have buttered on civilization, no matter how much you have accrued around you, what you consider learning, societal learning, you have 7 degrees that cling to you like rich, ripe grapes. And all they tell you, really, is about the origin of the Punic Wars. And statistics. Statistics have never helped the guy. When he's squatting down there. Have any of you ever taken a tent? This is something they never talk about camping. Have any of you ever taken a tent out into the woods someplace, put the tent up, and it's so great, you know, it's nice and light, and you put the tent up, and you get your sleeping bags out, you know, and you get your little Coleman lamp lit and all that jazz, you know, and you sit down there, and then it starts getting darker and darker and darker and darker, and you're squatting in your tent. It is now 2:30 in the morning, and you're laying in your sleeping bag, and nothing but woods all around you, woods and darkness, and you start hearing this mysterious sounds. By God, you didn't know they had things like this in Jersey. They never mentioned this in Backpacker, the magazine, which gives you all the inside dope on camping. You turn to this chick that's with you and say, want to go to town, Mabel, for a Big Mac, huh? How about a Big Mac? Wouldn't it taste kind of good now? And she's sound asleep. How the hell could she sleep through all this? Oh, God. It's going to come from that way. I know it's going to come from that way, back there by the creek. You reach over and you grab a monkey wrench or something, you know, you're having to fight him off. It's now rooting around outside. I can hear it out there. It's eating the tent pegs. What the hell is it? God, what the hell? Oh my God. I know many a guy who has been camping in the woods for 3 weeks who has not slept 1 minute of the time. When the light comes up over the eastern horizon and the woods begin to light up, it then looks very innocent again. You say, I don't know what the heck was the matter with me last night. That's crazy. Then the minute the sun starts dipping down over the creek on the western edge of the clearing, and you zip up the tent, very faintly you can start hearing them again. Faintly. It's faintly. What the hell is this? It's only at night. That is right. Only at night. Man, the nocturnal creature. Still inside of you is this tiny creature, 6.5 inches tall, who hid under the lily pads because the night hunters screamed and howled in the great Stygian swamps. General Tyre.
Someday you'll own. Someday you'll own. Sooner or later, you'll own.
General. Yeah, sooner or later.
You might as well just relax and enjoy it, friends. It's going to get you in the end, whether you drive a sports car, a sedan, a compact, or a limousine. General Tire has the tires you need at prices you can afford. Steel-belted radial tires, glass-belted original equipment tires, beautiful tires, round and rich. They smell so good, and they make such great conversation pieces. Pile them up in your living room and just sit around and look at them. Stop in today and see the tire professionals at your General Tire headquarters. See Joe DeSimone or Pat Simone in Manhattan. General Tire Service. Sing it out, man. Sooner or later, you'll own the General. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Out in the howling darkness, they lie with their sharpened claws, ready to leap and ready to come about and sniff your spoor and your trail and track you into your own lair. Now, I have, in my own way, but then again, I suppose there's no way to separate man from the primal. There's no conceivable way. And so this ultimately is what the search for identity is. Have I invented this entire civilization? Is it a sham, a myth, and a dream? Am I underneath it all? A true carnivore? Zoologists say one thing. Sigmund Freud says another. Yes, some men have found solace and salvation in playing the harmonica. Others have taken up tap dancing. Some collect stamps. Others write poems in the howling night. But all the while, out there in the darkness, that animal, that sneaking, creeping, unnamed thing. You put another ribbon in your corona. You start the second chapter. I'm gonna get to the core of this yet. And that howling, screaming, unnamed monster, the rolling calf that's within all of us, with the snorting, the screaming, the great blazing eyes, the pouncing claws, never will go away, ever, throughout all eternity. This is WOR New York. Stay tuned for John Wingate, please.
Gene Shepherd, July 1st, 1974. Not available online, not available in the cloud, nowhere, but right here in the dustbin of history, WBAI New York. This is your curator and janitor, Max Schmee. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be back Sunday night with the Golden Age of Radio from 8 until 10 here on WBAI. And actually, tomorrow night, or Friday morning at 4 a.m. as the crow flies, a repeat of last Sunday's Golden Age of Radio. So, tune in then. We got a show on the internet as well on Saturday mornings from 1 until 3. Two classic rebroadcasts of our Yesterday USA show. Links can be found on my Facebook page, facebook.com/MaxGoldenAge. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you'd like to write, I am max@wbai.org. Jimmy Dore coming up next. So, let me get out of here. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. So long, gang.
Hi, George. Well, finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah, yeah. That would be neat. Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal. Well, I will come to that.